sleep is needed. When you have a body, automatically you need a sleep. Otherwise, how will you sustain?
But the thing is, like, there's no why behind it. Like, there's no, like, why is it required?
Yeah, that's why you have to refer to Bhagavad Gita. That's why there's no need for reset. Whenever you have a body, automatically your body needs rest. Like, it's like a machine.
But the hardware
rests,
right? The heart keeps going. So.
That's the amazing invention of Krishna. That's how Krishna
it's
creates things.
One of the most efficient machines.
Most efficient
is
and
your heart, right?
If what happens if there is a breakdown?
Yeah.
If heart stop breathing, if you want to give maintenance to your heart, then you will go.
That was
an
example of, you know, the muscles don't really need rest. I mean, there are muscles that actually keep going, but then why is there like circadian rhythm? I mean, that's the interesting.
Because they cannot see mind, right? They cannot see mind. And mind is the one which needs rest, or mind is the one which makes you, you know, all this weak and, you know, controls most of the senses. Mind controls senses.
But to some extent, that why has been like when you sleep, there's a lot of healing that happens, and
it's only the NPR runs in a week or 2 weeks or what, that they're still figuring it out. So.
Yeah,
but then they also said that 7 hours of sleep is kind of the optimum amount of sleep in order to
recover your to next day.
I think New York Times it was there.
So you should give example of Prabhupada.
The scientists want to be engaged. They are also very active. So
no, that's a job. Yeah. No, Prabhupada says. No, Prabhupada discusses Muni. What's Muni and what's Sthira Muni? Next verse he will discuss. You will see what scientists are considered like that, because that's how that's the duty. That's their profession. They need to find something new and okay.
So I have a very quick question.
Yes.
So we say self-realization and then realization of Bhagavan. Two different things.
No, it's
the same.
I would say meaning actually. It's just putting, you know, words, just a word.
Because self-realization means that you realize that okay, you are the spirit, not the body. Right? I mean, you're the soul, not the body.
Yeah, you realize. But what else? It's not just you don't stop
then
there.
The association of this particular soul with the Bhagavan is the Bhagavan realization.
That's a yoga,
right?
The meaning
okay.
of yoga, right? So it's not that you don't, self-realization is not that you realize you're just spirit soul. But the next level is also what's the relationship with the Lord. That's a real yoga. The yoga is the link to the Supreme. So it's like a, you know, complete this thing. It's not, it's like you need to understand your spirit soul. Like basically you need to understand the five topics, the Bhagavad Gita. That's kind of, you know, we become more, so that was one point, so samadhi, right? Whatever we discussed last time. And the next one was?
Symptoms.
That was very important. So until text 53, so the Krishna talks about, you know, all, I would say, different characteristics of, not characteristics, what's the person who is in, like, how to attain the divine consciousness. No, we discussed so many verses, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the from 39 to almost 53, it's all about the person who is on divine consciousness, all those things he discussed. But from in 54, because Arjuna is a practical person, right? He's a worldly man, he has a family, yes, he's a king. So he wants to know, that's true, those are all, you know, person who is on divine consciousness, but he also wants to know practically how to recognize that person. If I see somebody, so he wants to know how to recognize. Basically he's asking this question for all of us, because we know Krishna is the devotee and the friend of Arjuna is the devotee and friend of Krishna, so he doesn't need to know all those things. Because for us people in general, for us he's asking this question, how to find or how to recognize or identify a person who is on that spiritual path. So why is it important for us? We discussed last time. Why is it very, very important for this text 54?
False gurus.
Why is it important for us to do what?
To recognize.
Identify.
Or identify the spiritual. Like how Arjuna is asking. So same thing we should keep asking, and we should also need to know to recognize the real spiritual person. Otherwise we get misguided.
Misguided.
And why is specifically for us? What was the main point for us from this text? We discussed that.
Parampara. Guru parampara.
No, I told very clearly. We discussed, we had a long discussion on that.
So important is, by the mercy of Guru you get God. So you need to know your right Guru, so that he can Like so we can guide you and then
you're very close, but I still am looking very specific. We discussed long time this one last week. Well, forgot or what? What's happening?
Forgetfulness.
Paramatma, it looks like you're all realizing Paramatma.
We are realizing Paramatma more than anyone
else. So this we discuss specifically how to select a guru, spiritual master. Right?
Right.
And what's the importance of having a guru or why we should have a spiritual master?
Diksha guru and
the mercy comes through the Lord.
Opens up. So now everybody is getting
they take over our karmas, like the wrong karmas, and then sustain us.
That's secondary. Yeah, that's a point. Yeah. So especially in this for us, and why do we need to have a guru? Why we need to have a guru? Let me put it straightforward. Why everybody needs to have a guru or a spiritual master?
To guide them and
connect them.
Order.
And that's how the mercy opens up. Otherwise,
parampara.
It's otherwise. That's the plug to the power.
Yeah, plug. Yeah.
So what happens if you don't? So if you submit, if you have a spiritual master, what happens? What do you do if you have a spiritual master?
You ask questions, get your doubts clarified.
Basically, he will tell you the authentic from the authentic text, so you get the right knowledge.
Yeah, that's guru parampara. Yeah,
Knowledge.
Authentic, bona fide knowledge. You get a mark.
It is one to one kind of. So he knows you, he guides you. General guidance is for all, but it is specific to you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But we discussed this.
Directly can't reach to Krishna.
No, we cannot go directly to Krishna. Yeah, we cannot approach Krishna because we don't know how to.
Yeah, so we need guru.
Yeah, that's the one point where we hook up to the plug. So that's how we connected to the.
Yeah.
The other important point is, so you will have somebody to report to or account. You will have accountability, right? So if you have somebody to track you and you know. So basically, what happens if you don't have anybody to report to? So you act on your.
Progress can be measured, right? Isn't that what it is?
Hmm?
Like you can have guru will be like can measure your progress because you need to get into that direction, right?
Yeah. So basically, if you don't have any authority, right? If you don't have a teacher, what happens if you don't have if you go to school to learn? If you don't have a teacher, you will end up being a
fool.
What happens if you learn on your own? You'll be a busy fool, right? You'll be doing on your own things, but if you know somebody and if you submit to somebody, they can guide you properly. So basically, here the importance is guidance. Otherwise, we'll do on our own. You will do research here a little bit, you know, and because of our short lifespan, you will waste our life. So that's why we submit to a guru, where we can give accountability for accountability basically. I do something and you know. Somebody is overlooking you. So then you will not do, right? If you know somebody is overlooking you, you will never do mistakes, right? At least we avoid, right? Is that true?
Yeah.
Kids especially, right? If parents are not there, what do the kids do? They create a big mess, right? All home, you know, they can. But if parents are watching them, they behave nicely. So same thing here applies. So that's why teacher is important. So always they keep you on the track, like a rail. We gave example of rail track, right?
Yeah.
So if you are not, if you know, they are like track, you know, guiding you. If there is no rail track, where will the rail go? Or the train? It will wobble and fall somewhere. So it's very important.
I'm too curious. So why is, I mean, it's good for us to know, but what about Arjuna? Why did he want to find out other people?
Arjuna is asking for us. Most of the question is for, we know Arjuna is a very pure devotee of the Lord.
Right.
So he is generally asking for people in general.
Okay.
If he didn't ask, how will we know things?
It is also a possibility that he was put under illusion by Krishna for that period, so that he could speak Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, of course, we know that. Yeah,
the future generations could have something.
Yeah, we read that in introduction and all.
And
right?
Also,
maybe,
medium.
Yeah, indication that you need to have Brahma Jigyasa, right? Only when you query is
when you get
Krishna
knowledge,
will
yeah.
respond and provide you more guidance.
So Bhagavad Gita is not, you know, just for Arjuna and all, right? It's all for all of us to in generations to come. If he didn't ask, then you know, how will we know? how to recognize and all. So it's okay, Rajesh bro. And what are the four questions? So this especially it, Arjuna is asking four questions, right? So what are those four questions?
Language.
So there is, so first question was, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence, right? Who is on that transcendentally situated? How do we recognize a person who is transcendentally situated? That's one question. How does he speak and what is his language? So that's the second question. And what's the meaning of, we discussed also there are two meanings in this especially. One is literal meaning, you can take it as it is. And the other one is a more deeper or hidden meaning. That's only the acharyas, Vaishnava acharyas, based on, you know, their realization, they can decode that one. So that's what, so how does he speak and his language? What's the deeper meaning of that?
How does he respond to or behave in different situations?
Yeah. Mm. So how does he speak and what is his language mean? So whenever you put in a situation where he's provoking, somebody will praise you, somebody will, you know, scold you or look at your anger, somebody will be neutral. So how do you respond back? So that's the deeper meaning for that. How does he speak means, how does he respond back to you when you are put in different situations? So that's some hidden deeper meaning for that.
Prabhu, one question. This situation merged in transcendence is being asked for a person who's Krishna conscious. What are the symptoms of a person who's
person
Krishna
who is in
Krishna
consciousness? Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And the next third question is, how does he sit? No, that's a literal. So what's the deeper meaning of that?
How does he remain? How does he maintain his poise?
No.
How does he control his senses?
How does he control his senses? Or how does he not? What's the meaning? Other one, I think I gave one more meaning, right? For that?
How does he engage his senses?
That's walk.
How does he not engage his senses? Mm-hmm. That's one meaning. How does he not engage his senses?
That's the sitting?
That's the sitting, yes. How does he sit means not engage his senses. Oh. That's the deeper meaning for that. And how does he walk means, how does he engage his senses? Mm-hmm. Two different things. How does he not engage his senses and how does he engage his senses? Two different things for that. If you read that, we'll not get it. That's how Vaishnava acharyas, you know, parampara, they are more, they can see things clearly, more clearly than us. We cannot.
No, I didn't understand why sitting is disengaging and walking is engaging.
How does he sit?
No, I mean, as you said,
literal
sitting,
meaning.
Sitting, the hidden meaning.
Hidden meaning is how does he not engage his senses?
Yeah, so.
Two different things. One is how do you engage your senses, and the other thing is how you will not engage your senses.
Yeah, that's true. But why not engaging is, what similarity it has
with
to
this
sitting?
With this sitting?
Yeah.
No, that's why two different meanings.
Okay.
Two different literal meaning and hidden meaning.
Sitting means you are
sitting
idle, not
doing
anything.
Not
right?
Nothing, not doing anything.
Oh.
So your senses, you will not engage your senses, so you will retract back.
Okay.
So yeah, if you see
sitting.
The word by word translation, it says asita, means does remain still,
yeah.
Right? So it's not really sitting, but how do you really, you know, maintain
like,
that?
Yeah, sitting means you're not doing anything.
Not doing anything.
Yeah,
yeah,
like
yeah,
maybe
that,
you can
that
put
answer.
It. Yeah. And what was amazing in the purport, what does Prabhupada says? So you can recognize a person, if he's an intelligent person.
When he speaks something, you will do.
Right?
As long as he
speaks. When he speaks just about Krishna all the time.
Right? So basically Prabhupada says, when you speak, then only you can make out what type of person you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'll read Prabhupada. It's sweet. So the most important is how the man in Krishna consciousness speaks. For speech is the most important quality of any man. And certainly, a well-dressed fool cannot be identified unless he speaks. But as soon as he speaks, he reveals himself at once. True? We cannot make out, right? If somebody, you know, dressing nicely, sitting, you know, we cannot make out whatever. But when he starts talking, then you can make out really what. And I gave example of, you know, Arivilas Prabhu. If you give him 2 or 3 minutes, if any person, you introduce to a person, if that person is kind of, you know, open, like, you know, just talking to, if he can talk 2-3 minutes with Arivilas Prabhu, he can exactly tell where he stands. What is his stand or what's his position. He can make out, you know.
Prabhuji, there is a proverb that goes with this, which is, it is better to keep your mouth closed and let others think you are a fool than open it up and prove it.
Yeah, of course, yeah, you can keep quiet. But in spirituality, until you open up, you cannot, you know, you cannot be judged. So if you, anyway, that's okay. Prabhupada used to make fun, you know, there are a lot of Babaji's. They used to do Maunarat whole life.
Yeah.
There are people, years, they do Maunarat.
In Jainism, I think it's very popular. They do
no.
Why?
Jain,
they do that.
So Prabhupada used to, you know, instead of talk, real silence, for Prabhupada said, you know what's the meaning of real silence? Silence means what?
Not talking nonsense.
Not thinking.
Silence means, especially for us, the meaning is you don't even talk single word, right?
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
But for Prabhupada, the silence is always talking about Krishna consciousness, Krishna. So if somebody, you know, if they say, I'm doing Maunarat without talking anything, that means he used to chastise them. You don't waste your time, you talk about Krishna, you discuss about Krishna. So that's the real silence.
Has there been a person like that? Prabhupada.
And now, of course, no, but I don't think anybody comes closer to Prabhupada, but yeah, people are trying. Yeah. His disciples, especially, they travel, they preach.
Mirabai.
Yeah. Oh, of course, there are a lot of, yeah.
Yeah.
No, there are past, there are so many authorities, not just Prabhupada. This before, there are a lot of personalities who does that.
Chaitanya.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, there are a lot.
Like,
yeah,
I mean,
there, no, I meant now, I understood,
yeah.
Like in now,
yeah,
she
yeah.
asked for now, current
yeah,
time.
Yeah,
yeah, correct.
In current times, in
yeah,
this
correct, correct. So then, so those are the four questions. So then, the remaining part of the chapter is Krishna answers these four questions, and especially the 55, he answers the first question. So we can, if you don't have any questions, we can go to text. I think that's all, right? Those are the points mainly we discuss.
Sanjay,
do
you have that app?
That's no,
Sahu
added.
Sahu,
Sahu.
That's
why
I was
trying
to.
Yeah,
let's play.
Yeah, you can play. You can try to follow.
App is how to
read the
sentence.
No,
in the exact way, rather than you.
We are messing up the pronunciation, so we thought.
Probably have a deal.
So we should put that, right? That's more easier.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Next time, when you come,
we'll do it.
So we'll just listen to that pronunciation, then we can recite after that. We can. Okay, let's recite together. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Prajahati Yadakaman Sarvan Partha Manogata Atmani Evatman Tushta Sita Prajnasya Tadoshyate. Let's do it again. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Prajahati Yadakaman Sarvan Partha Manogatan Atmani Evatman Tushta Sita Prajnasya Doshyate We are very close. At least now we can nicely
sing. Rakesh was even singing.
That's the real thing actually, right? Sanskrit should be sung actually.
I think the English, sorry, the Hindi, the whatever they wrote in the Sanskrit, it's very matches what you're saying.
Okay, so the text 55. So this is answer to the first question. Who is asking what's the symptom of one who is transcendentally situated?
The Supreme Personality of God had said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification which arise from mental compulsion, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the Self alone, then he is said to be pure transcendental consciousness.
Okay, let's read it again. It's very sweet if you understand. There are two parts in this. The Supreme Personality of God had said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification which arise from mental concoction. So that's one part. Basically here, a spiritually situated person or transcendentally situated person is always aloof from worldly pleasures. Right? He doesn't involve in anything for his own sense gratification. So that's the one part. Then, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the Self alone. So that's the second part. So what does he do? Second part is he finds happiness within himself. Self alone means soul. So when he realizes that he is a spirit soul, he becomes happy. He doesn't depend on anything outside for to be happy. Because we know happiness is within inside. It's not on the outside things. So two parts, right? One is always aloof from the worldly pleasures outside, and the second part is he is always happy inside. Who is really self-situated, he is always happy inside. So he doesn't need anything, external things to be happy. So that's two parts in this.
But Arjuna's question was more of the physical symptoms, right? Or the implicit symptoms. I mean, like in this first question, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness merges? So is it like physical symptoms? Is it what are the physical characteristics?
Not just physical, the mental also. Mental also? It's not just physical. Of course, there, you know, that's a literal meaning. It can be taken as the physical thing. How does he sit? How does he walk? That's, you can take it as a literal. But the more deeper is this one, the deeper meaning of. So when do we look for pleasure outside? So, but here it said that, you know, you find pleasure within, you are happy, you know, within yourself. You don't look for happiness outside. So why do we look for happiness outside?
We don't find it within us.
So whenever we feel incomplete, we start looking for happiness outside. So, you know, if I have more money, I will be happy. If I have a bigger home, I will be happy. But have you find anybody who is happy by even after getting all this?
No.
It's not possible.
It's more and more.
Because the happiness is within ourselves. So when you realize you are a spirit soul and you engage yourself, what's the duty of the spirit soul? Always?
Eternal servant of Krishna.
You are servant. So when you realize that and when you really engage yourself in the service, then you become happy. Other things, it won't give happiness. And very beautiful example is, have you heard of musk deer?
Mm-hmm.
Musk.
Mm-hmm.
You know musk, right? That perfume thing?
Yeah, sure.
What does the musk deer do? Have you heard any time before?
Yeah.
It's usually, I think it lives in Himalayas and all, musk deer. It's very popular. And it's very, very, that fragrance it's very
strong.
Popular.
Yeah.
Strong.
Yeah.
I think saffron
kasturi.
Kasturi.
Kasturi?
Yeah. Kasturi.
I think so. Kasturi.
Right. So what the
Kasturi man.
Kasturi.
Oh,
they have
the
nabi.
Actually.
They have the nabi, that one that smell.
Nabi?
Nabi means.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what it does is, so it carries that nabi or, you know, it's under the intestine, whatever, the tummy, it carries. But it keeps searching for the smell, where the smell is coming. No, really. So what it does is, it keeps roaming everywhere, finding for it. Then after long, you know, searching, it gets exhausted and it dies. because it cannot find. So same thing in here also, the material world. So we are searching everywhere, you know, for happiness. If this gives me happiness, the big home gives me happiness, you know, or beautiful wife gives me happiness. So we keep searching. But the desires will never be able to get fulfilled.
So day after day, that deer searches for that thing?
Yeah, it continuously keeps searching where it gets. Then after some time, you know, exhausted, and it just falls down and it dies. So same thing, our senses is, you know, the desires is like, you know, the rivers flowing to the ocean, right? The desires are considered, or the analogy used is, the rivers continuously flowing to the ocean. At some point, all the water goes to the ocean. But it's a continuous flow. So same thing, the desires in our mind, it keeps continuously flowing. And our senses cannot sustain. How much we can enjoy, you have seen, right? How much can you eat? If you take some sweet which you really like, what happens if you eat gulab jamun every day continuously for hours? What happens? First of all, you will feel diabetes, you know, you will get diabetes. Then, you know, you will know the impact of getting diabetes.
Exactly.
So same thing. So our senses cannot handle the desires we have. So you keep trying and, you know, we get diseases, whatever, you know. There is a limit basically. So it becomes stagnant. Then you give up and we also die. Not fulfilling, you know, real desire, we give up and we just die. And what does a real spiritual person do who is really situated on the transcendental platform? Always
to service.
He always serves because he knows that's only eternal occupation or Sanatana Dharma. So he always engages and he is happy. And we know that when we serve the Lord or the Master, automatically the servant will also be happy. You know, you don't have to do anything on your own to be happy. Okay, what else? Any questions? We'll go through the report now. Yeah.
The Bhagavatam affirms that any person who is fully in Krishna consciousness or devotional service of the Lord has all those good qualities of the great sages. Whereas a person who is not so transcendentally situated has no good qualifications, because he is sure to be taking refuge in his own mental concoction. Consequently, it is rightly said herein that one has to give up all kinds of sense desire manufactured by mental concoction. Artificially, such sense desires cannot be stopped. But if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, then automatically sense desires subside without extraneous effort. Therefore, one has to engage himself in Krishna consciousness without hesitation, for the devotional service will instantly help one onto the platform of transcendental consciousness. The highly developed soul always remains satisfied in himself by realizing himself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. Such a transcendentally situated person has no sense desires resulting from petty materialism. Rather, he remains always happy in his natural position of eternally serving the Supreme Lord.
Right. So basically, in this, it's saying how to dovetail our desires. So we have, for example, we have to eat, right? We cannot stay without eating. But what do? If you want to eat something,
eat prasadam.
You eat prasadam. You offer bhoga, then you take the prasadam. It becomes prasadam. You take prasadam. Then, if you want to, people are crazy about music, right? So much music, all these things. So what do? If you are really crazy about music, how do you dovetail the desire? There are so many varieties of bhajans, right? Kirtans. So you can engage. It's not that, you know, there is no alternative. There is an alternative. It's just that, you know, you have to make, you have the desire to change, right? You, first of all, you need to have a desire. Then you have, you need to put the effort. So if you put some effort, automatically, you know. So we covered mainly these things, right? Mainly the food, because every time we anchor to eat, so prasadam is the best. So automatically the tongue gets, comes under control. And when the tongue comes under control, automatically your tummy gets, it's under control. Then tummy, then automatically the genitals comes under control. So it's a straight line, the Prabhupada, according to Prabhupada, it's a straight line. So when you control the tongue, that's why tongue is, it's a very ferocious, you know, you need to control. Without the tongue control, everything else gets spoiled. Then what do you want to, if you want to see, you know, beautiful things. People travel, you know, so many far, far distances to see places, right? Right? We have the desire to see beautiful things, right? It can be anything. You want to see beautiful women, or you want to, you know, men, women want to see beautiful men. It's there. It's a desire. It's there. But how do we dovetail that desire? You take darshan of Radha Krishna, visit temples. So when you see automatically all this, so your mind becomes purified. Because one point we'll discuss, because everything starts from the mind, right? Because the mind is the storehouse of all your desires. That's the one which keeps sending to, you know. If you don't control the mind, you'll become crazy, right? You'll become insane. You became insane if you don't control the mind. Then if you want to read, because reading, a lot of people, you know, we are... We like reading novels, reading newspaper, all those things. So how do you do if you want to read something?
Krishna.
There are tons of, you know, books on the spiritual, especially Prabhupada has given enough books. If you want to read, it will be a lifetime. It takes lifetime. If you want to read Bhagavatam and understand, it takes almost lifetime to read and understand. So that's why, so we have desires, but only thing we need to do is we need to dovetail properly under the guidance. And so in this so we discuss that, you know, a real transcendental person, he finds happiness within himself, self-satisfied, right? So if you go to text chapter 10 text 9 10.9. So here Krishna is giving what is. So how can you really find satisfaction? How does that person, whatever he is mentioning in that text, how does he find the satisfaction?
431.
Page 431. So the translation. Of course, it's a very nice Sanskrit also. Machita matgata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. The thoughts of my few devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So basically, they are engaging in always in service. They are reading and they are discussing about Krishna. So those kind of people or the souls, they find great satisfaction within themselves once you do all these activities.
So in terms of sense gratification though, if you look at like going to Niagara Falls or something like that, like natural beauty, it's, you know, it's, then how does that?
So you can always, you know, even if you see something very beautiful, you can always think of Krishna, like how he has created. So if you have that kind of consciousness, that you can, but for our level, I think, you know, for us now, it's just, you know, we want to see something beautiful like that.
Right.
But person who is really,
if you go there and appreciate it.
Oh yeah, you can actually, yeah, you can always, you know, yeah, you can always see how the creation, how beautiful things are.
And in a way, I mean, that it's like watching a good dance, you know, or watching, playing somebody listening to someone playing good music. all that appreciation, you know, it's all
good. Music means related to what? Like good,
you know,
you said good dance,
good veena, good
yes, of course, yeah. So if they, the performer, if he's, they're doing it to glorify the Lord, especially in Jagannath Puri temple, I think every night they have what is the dance program?
Odissi.
Every night, right? They do that performance. That's for the satisfaction of the Lord. So something like that, if for example you do nice Carnatic music or, you know, appreciating the glories of the Lord, if it's related to the
Suprabhatam in Venkateshwara temple.
Yeah, that's beautiful, right? So anything which is linked to the Lord, it's good. But if it's something which is not linked to the, if you cannot link to the Lord, that means that's not good. So you should not be engaging those kind of activities. I'm sorry, but that's basically we all listen to music, all those things, right? Of course, now I used to listen. I can remember, I don't know, this is in 94 or 95. You know, in India, there is something called DNA network. I don't know everybody. So what they do is the DNA network. So all this Western musicians, so they bring them to India and they perform many places, Bangalore, Bombay, Delhi and all. So this guy, I forgot that name, he's a very popular Western musician, like a rock musician.
George Harrison.
No, very rock music, very crazy guy actually. Like something like that, very close to Aerosmith, like a very rock music. So, 94 or something, my cousin, he used to work for that DNA network. So, he got free tickets for us. So, I still remember, now I was kind of, you know, introspecting. So, this is crazy actually, you know, you go 2 hours before, they open the gate. And once, you know, they make you, there is no sitting and all there, it's a rock music. You cannot expect to sit. So, everybody has to stand. So we were standing for almost 3 hours, whole show we were standing in the outside, the whole ground. Once it starts, man, so loud, I cannot imagine now how the time, they have big speakers, right, that's how they make very loud music, everybody in the front, you have to dance. I did that, I was there and I could differentiate the things now easily, how it affects. So this is almost 2 hours going before, 3 hours of standing. All this effort to just, you don't even see that person because he is far. And you are, you know, in, and they have put a big stage and all, right, for him, he will be on the top. But how much desires we have to hear something, we want to hear something which, you know, we feel good. But, you know,
I
did all that, you know, it's
I
not
did that,
that
1 month, 2 months back.
No, but you went for something related to the Carnatic music, something very spiritual.
This? Not spiritual at all. No, he started out spiritually, but then it went down.
That's okay.
Yeah,
it's a
group.
Guru.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a guru.
Where was he?
Swami, Prabhuji, you missed it, huh? Rakesh Prabhu.
Yeah, Ilaraja, I'm a very big fan of
him. Yeah. So, yeah, I have been to, you know, I had all these desires. It's not that I didn't do all this, I did, and I give an example of car, the car racing, that sound itself, I used to like the sound, you can imagine or not, I used to like this, you cannot see the car on the track, because they go so fast, you cannot even see the car, but the sound, I was attracted to the sound, you just, you know, but I changed my desires, I kind of dovetail, now also I have, but I listen to more, you know, Kirtan and all, now I cannot, I don't think I can go back. Of course, if devotees pray, if I commit offenses and all, I'll fall and I'll go back. But yeah, it's very powerful. That's why hearing
the other
is.
Thing is like you slowly lose taste for that, right?
Yeah, I think here Prabhupada said, right? For
we had good taste and everything.
So here Prabhupada says, consequently, it is rightly said here that one has to give up all kinds of sense desire manufactured by mental concoction. Artificially, such sense desires cannot be stopped. Right? So he's saying here, you cannot. So if you want to drink, like especially, I don't know what happened to Swami Prabhu's this thing, determination, but drinking tea. Drinking tea.
Coffee.
Drinking
coffee.
Determination
is the problem.
Yeah. No, but it's a very, very, you know, you cannot give up that easily if you are so used. But slowly, you know, if you start thinking, oh, I am drinking without offering. Right? If that thought comes in your mind, then slowly, automatically, you will give up. It comes, it's natural. That's how, because we are the soul, we are not the body, right? So automatically those things, you know, the natural instinct starts coming out. I want to offer because, you know, I cannot take anything without offering. So then you give up all the... So we cannot give up desires, right? Desires will be always there. It's not that desires will not be. You cannot be desireless. Then it becomes shunyavadi, nirvishesha shunyavadi, right? Like mayavadis. They stop everything, try to stop, but you cannot. Mind is there. Only thing is, according to text 55, the mind has to be purified. So why the mind is given so much importance here?
Because that's the factory.
It's a factory. It keeps producing the desires, manufacturing the desires. So unless you purify the desires, you can keep getting the wrong ones, wrong desires. It will lead you to wrong direction and you can end up in dead end.
So this is an indirect reference to the fact that it's the intelligence that you have to change.
So
the
let's
intelligence will control the
yeah. So
mind,
let's see
right?
The hierarchy. So what is that example of chariot in the Bhagavatam we had discussed, I think the chariot. So if you the chariot, the five horses,
five
right?
Senses.
Five horses.
So you have five senses, right? What are those five senses? Mainly the working senses, right? The eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, right? And who is the passenger in the chariot?
Our soul is the passenger.
Soul is the passenger. Then who is the driver?
Mind.
Intelligence is the driver. So you have a soul, then the next one is intelligence. Right? Then what about the reins or the ropes? That's the mind, right? All the ropes to control the. Then the senses?
Horses.
So what happens if your mind is not controlled? So what happens if the mind is not controlled? The mind is not controlled means in this case the ropes or reins. So what happens to the senses?
They all different directions.
So can you be a safe passenger in that chariot? You feel safe?
Journey becomes hazardous.
So what happens to the passenger? So you'll be anxious, right? If you cannot, right? If you go somewhere in the bus you're going or a car, then immediately there is a car like brake failure or something like that. What happens? Become anxious. So in this, I think if you see that picture, maybe you can see that,
yes,
you know, he is like, maybe in that book, I don't have
yes,
in this
sir.
Book, I think
yes.
That book
yes.
May have
yes.
It.
Yes,
sir.
Is it there? Yes.
But then you have the false ego also, right?
Yeah, that's...
This is all?
Plate 9.
Yeah,
sir.
That guy.
Plate 9.
Oh, sir,
this
one, yeah.
This one, right?
Yes. So what does it say?
Oh, intelligence driver.
No, what does
the individual
the text
is a passenger
say?
Is the individual is a
the
passenger
is
the car
passenger.
Of the material body.
Okay,
and intelligence is the driver.
Mind is the driving instrument and the senses are the horses.
So according to that analogy, so if you don't control the mind, then everything else will be gone.
What is the driving instrument? Is that the
driving instrument rings? Is the mind, yeah, the rings, yeah. That's the mind, which is supposed to be controlling the senses. But in our cases, most of the time, it's opposite hierarchy. We are doing the reverse way. The senses control the mind. Then mind is controlling the intelligence. Then, of course, the intelligence is controlling the soul. Supposed to be
reverse.
Intelligence should be clear, very clear. Which can control the mind. So mind can control the senses, not senses control the mind.
So mind is the driving instrument, means the chariot is the driving instrument?
Reins.
Oh, this one. Okay.
The ropes. That's the one which can control the horses, right?
Oh.
So let's see, 6th chapter, 6th verse. What does it say about mind? So if you don't have a controlled mind, sixth chapter, text 6, the translation,
262, okay.
For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends, but for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. So if you have an uncontrolled mind, then it won't do any good on your spiritual path. It'll always keep fighting with the mind. So that's why in the translation for text 55, everything, you know, arises from mental concoction, because the mind is so powerful. It keeps, you know, giving the ideas, everything, all the time it gives some ideas, mental speculation, it keeps speculating. So if you have a very clear intelligence, then you can control the mind. You know what to do, right thing, right? If your mind is, if your intelligence is clear. Otherwise, it's your mind will controlling the intelligence. It's, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self. So, our for all of us, the practical point is, some point we have to control the mind. For us, we need to have clear intelligence. And the intelligence comes from having a proper knowledge. So when you have a proper knowledge, then your intelligence will become, it's clear what to do, you know, we get the knowledge, right knowledge, then your intelligence will be clear what to do. Okay, any questions? I think that's all we have on this one.
So why there is so much stress on conquering the mind rather than intelligence?
Because as we said, mind is the one which is a machine which keeps desires, generates the desire.
Correct,
and mind is the one which stores the desire, all the desire.
But then intelligence should ideally be controlling the mind, right? So
yes.
if we conquer the intelligence first, then everything will get rectified, right?
Yeah, if you have a proper intelligence, yes, you can control the mind.
That's why we are coming here, Prabhupada.
That's why this is giving the right knowledge, the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering why the shloka is, this shloka is talking about the mind rather than intelligence.
Yeah, because mind is more, it's very chanchal. Or it's, as he said in that 6.6, it can become very worst enemy if you don't control the mind.
But I think according to that picture, you're using the mind, the intelligence, intellect is using the mind to control the senses. So it's kind of almost the reverse, like in terms of, if my mind is, if there was no intellect, then there would be no, mind would do nothing, because the mind would just fall down and the horses would just go their own direction.
That's
so
even more dangerous.
That's what you want to avoid, right?
So in a way, what Prabhuji is saying is correct. Like, I mean, we have to have the
intellect.
Tame the intellect, so
yeah.
The intellect can tame the mind to control the senses. So
yeah.
I think that kind of makes sense.
But and the way you tame the intellect is the knowledge.
Proper knowledge, yeah.
Right.
You need to have proper knowledge.
That is why people who go insane, the mind is there, but they've lost.
Yeah, they lost the mind. That's why it's always emphasized on the mind, right? Insane, you're saying. Everything is based on the mind, because mind is very powerful. That's maybe more powerful and...
So they say this thing has a mind of its own, which basically means you can't actually have an intellectual conversation whether it actually does some random thing.
Yeah, you cannot have.
Insan in English and insan in Hindi.
Insan. So I think that's all the point on that one. Any other questions on that? Okay, let's go to text 56. So this is answer to second question. Second question was, how does he speak and what is his language, right? So So this is answer. Krishna is answering. How does the person respond who is spiritually situated? How does he respond back when he is put into any provoking situation? So let's see.
Dukkeshu anudvigna manah sukeshu vigatastraha vitaraka bhayam krodhah sthitati munirvicchate. Dukkeshu anudvigna manah sukeshu vigatastraha vitaraka bhayam krodhah.
Well, that the music almost makes our mind kind of make it
like. Yeah, not really. It's very sweet if you do it.
Yeah.
This one. Right?
Translation.
One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear and anger, is called as a sage of steady mind.
Wow, it's filled with so much, right? So much of, it's a pregnant sentence actually, if you decode it. No, it's filled with so much, you can decode and you know, it's... So here, especially it's talking about how does he respond back, right? This is the main thing Krishna is answering. So what is a person who put in any situation, very provoking situation, you always remain calm and equipoised, right? Always, you know, he doesn't lose his equilibrium of mind, always say. So what all those things? So if you are put in, like who is not disturbed when you are in suffering from threefold miseries, or when there is happiness, right? So basically when you are put in distress, you remain peace, calm and peaceful. When you are happy, your peace and calm. That's very difficult, but we have to practice. And the other one is, main thing is attachment, fear and
anger.
It's called as sage of steady mind. So what are the threefold miseries? So here it said not disturb even in the midst the threefold miseries. This we have discussed before. Yeah, device question also we
old
went to
no,
that.
No.
That's real
it's
problems.
Individuals
of, life,
of the misery of the individual, misery due
somebody.
To others, and misery due to natural circumstances.
Yeah, so Prabhuji was telling the Sanskrit word.
Yeah.
Adi Atmik.
Adi
Bhautik. Adi Daivik.
Adi
Daivik. So Adi Atmik means?
Caused by
self-inflicted. Like
self-inflicted.
Your mind, right? Your mind can create a work, right? So oneself, anything causes, our own body can cause, our mind, so it can cause problems. Like this and misery, right? Like person who is, the mind is not controlled, as we said, is very insane, and it's a problem. It's not, you know, he cannot be happy. And Adi Daivik means
natural circumstances
by material nature, like you know, all this typhoon, disaster, earthquake, all this catastrophes. So it can. And Adi Bhautik means
other living
miseries caused by other living entities. Who is the best other living entity which causes, especially for human beings?
Manager.
I didn't think of like that.
Spouse or manager, same thing.
No, I thought of is, you know, especially mosquitoes.
Oh.
No, really, right? They're so small, tiny. But they can cause big
Is that recording going home to
yeah, I'll put it online also.
Madhavachandra Prabhu used to say in-laws all the time.
I won't say anything. I just said mosquitoes. So.
I didn't say Prabhu, I said what Madhavachandra Prabhu
yeah,
used
I know,
to
I know.
Say.
I quoted him.
I didn't make any. I'm just repeating Prabhupada's words. Prabhupada is mosquitoes. Because mosquitoes can cause what? Very serious things, right? Malaria. And
dengue
fever. My friend's father, he died because of that. I couldn't believe in India. He died because of that fever. The only thing is because the reason was they didn't have the proper medical facility to treat immediately, and you have a very very short time of time, no time to detect and do. So for him, you know, he got this fever. Then next day they thought, you know, regular fever. They gave him some local medicine, and he was okay. Like, you know, it was increasing, but they thought it will reduce. In India, especially, you know, we ignore a lot of things. You know, it will reduce. You put some other thing or. Then next day, you know, it became worse. So it's BP or something. It started. He started feeling unconscious or something. Then immediately they took him to the local facility. They gave him something. Then organ by organ failed. First one kidney failed. Then the next kidney failed. Next, I think it came to liver or something. Then the heart, it stopped. 2 days. He was a healthy person. He actually went to perform last rites, you know, that 14 or 21 days or something for his mother in a river, you know, in a river in Hyderabad, somewhere near Andhra Pradesh. They went to perform the last rite for his mother, this thing. There was so much of garbage and all, right, in India and all, especially. So he took bath in that water. So he was there in that taking bath and all. So naturally, you know, mosquito bites or something he got. 2 days. My friend was here in US. They called him next day saying, you know, there is some eye fever and all. So please come. They don't know what is it. So immediately he flew. And he went. That time, it's almost lost. He immediately died. He couldn't recognize and all. The body became big because of water or something. It became big, all the legs, everything. So, if you consider that, so your manager can be better, your wife can be better, but mosquitoes can be worse.
I think mental tormentation is bigger than physical.
That's true.
Which is caused by humans.
That's true. So that's why it's misery is caused by your own self, mind. Mind can cause self-infliction.
No, I meant even the other, when you're talking about others. Mosquito as an example, but I think the tormentation given by other humans.
It could be like, you can see it in a different perspective.
Yeah.
That your mind is playing games, even if the person is like behaving alright, but you are thinking more than the other person is.
So
there's a way you can shut your mind and not even shut your
mind. I think you're right there too. I mean, you have both sides, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Anything
but
other than.
I mean, there's only to some extent you can do it. You can create that barrier, but beyond that, you can't.
So that's why we all have to become Sita Dhira here, right?
It's a bigger discussion.
Yeah, of course. No, that's why anything mind and all, it can be a very, very complication. It's a lot of complicated. So that's why here in this example, text 56, that's why everyone has to become Sita Dhira. So when you control your mind, then everything, you don't get affected. That's what I think maybe Mataji was pointing to, that when you control your mind, then you don't get affected by threefold miseries. So it can be other person. You can deal easily. But that cannot be done if it's not spiritually oriented. You cannot control, you know, if you don't chant, if you don't practice any of this. Now we know something. If you control mind, things will be better. But if you are not dovetailed your activities in spiritual, like, you know, all the devotional service, that won't work. You cannot control mind. Only when you dovetail your activities in devotional service, then you apply this to try to control mind, how to do it, then it works. So that was and of course elated when there is happiness. That is tough, right? How can you, when you are happy, why you want to control your happiness?
Because sadness is sweetie.
Yeah, it might follow.
We know, right? Whenever there is some ups and downs, right? There is some happiness, but the distress is waiting next door or, you know, outside the door. So after that moment over, then automatically the distress comes and nobody can avoid. Even since we are taken body, the material body in this earthly planet, even if you are a spirit, that's what this is all. This is for a people who is practicing spirituality. So Prabhupada is making it clear. So you are on a spiritual path. Don't expect that everything is nice and, you know, flowery. Like, you know, it's not like that. So we are going to come across problems, but how to deal? There is a solution. How to deal with it? So you know how to deal with it. It's not that, you know, once we take up spirituality, then we will not get problems. That's never teach. Bhagavad Gita never teaches us. And which verse was that? Second chapter only, right? Matra sparshas to kaunteya. What do we do with the problems?
Sukha dukkha.
Sukha dukkha. 214, right? Matra sparshas to kaunteya. Sitoshana sukha dukkha. Agama paino anitya. Tamas titikshasva. What's the meaning of titikshasva?
Endurance.
Tolerate. Yes. So we have to learn how to tolerate. That's the only thing which will help. Otherwise, we cannot do anything. There is no other alternative. We have to tolerate. So when you are happy, so maybe you should practice. Try to tolerate the happiness.
But that's the duality that we talk about.
So because we go through duality, so. So we need to tolerate happiness, because otherwise what happens? If you are always happy, happy, you will get easily carried away. Right? You get carried, usually with happiness you get carried away. Then some problems come, then you go down again, you know, you get subdued. And the other one is, who is free from attachment, fear and anger. So this is especially Vita Raga, who is free from, Raga means attachment, Vita Bhaya means who is free from fear, and who is Krodha, who is free from anger. So the transcendentally situated person, so he should be free from attachment, fear and anger. So symptoms, any spiritually, if they say he's very spiritual person, you know, so then they should have all these characteristics or symptoms. Otherwise, so who is a good example of Vitaraga, who was free from fear?
Prahlad,
then Durva Maharaj from Srimad Bhagavatam. These are great personalities, right? Durva Maharaj, even you, of course, both are same age actually. If you see both Prahlad Maharaj and Durva Maharaj, both are 5 years old. But one went to forest and he wanted to meet Vishnu. So Narada Muni came across. Narada Muni told him, you are just a small, you know, child, you go back home, you don't know what you are doing. But then he told, you know, if you don't want to guide me, please give, make way for me, I am going, you don't, you know, stop me. So all this forest he went, I think in the picture it says, you know, all the lions are there somewhere, or crocodile, like that. So he was fearless, he never had the fear. Then Prahlad Maharaj, we know it's a very popular, right? He was put into so much of distress. The elephant tried to crush him, then the snakes, then they tried to put him in the fire, but he never felt fear because always he was under the protection of Vishnu or Narsimhadev. He was always protected. He never had the fear. Then who is example of Vita Bhaya, who was free from attachment? I don't know if you can think of, but very popular example we use is King Grantidev. It's a very, very popular example in Srimad Bhagavatam. So he was a king and he was fasting. He did his fast. So then he was about to break his fast. He was about to take his prasadam. Then one brahmana came. Then he asked for the food. So then he gave off of his plate prasadam. He shared. Maybe, no, brahmana came, he gave off. Then after that brahmana left, then immediately he was about to eat, then the 3-4 people came, you know, like vaishyas, who business people like that, they came. Then they told, we are hungry, give me food. Then he shared that. Then immediately there is one more thing, dog eater or somebody, with a dog he came. Then he told, I am hungry, give me food. Then they took the remaining, whatever he had, he gave, that's all he had. Then later, all of those personalities, they were devatas, demigods. So they just wanted to check how good qualified king he was. So he was not attached to his prasadam or anything. He didn't have attachment. So he gave up everything just to satisfy the other people.
What's the king's name again?
King Ramtidev. R-A-N-T-H-I-T-I Ramtidev. And Vita Krodha. And whose devotee was free from anger. Who's a good example of that? From Bhagavatam. Even when you are put into that situation, provoking situation, he didn't get anger himself, he didn't get become angry. So Ambarish Maharaj. And because he met Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni is a temper person. He gets angry like that, just you know, if you say something, always on the nose. Anger is always on, so he's like that. So Ambarish Maharaj, same thing, he was fasting, it was time to break his fast. Then Durvasa Muni came. Then Durvasa Muni told, I'm going to get go take bath in the river, come back fresh. Then the same time, the time we break fast, right? Whenever we do Ekadashi, next day we have that specific time where we break fast. So we eat some grains at that time. So the time came. But then he knew he cannot eat unless, you know, he feeds Durvasa Muni. But then the priests in the kingdom, they told, because it's a religious principle, you have to break your fast. Otherwise, whatever you have done, the whole fasting, it will not get the benefit of that. So then they told, just take a drop of Charanamrit, whatever is offered to the Lord. So it's not eating any grain or anything, and it's a Charanamrit. So he just took one drop. But then Durvasa Muni, because of his mystic power, he came to know that, you know, he broke fast. Then immediately he came, and with so much anger, then I think he pulled out his one ear or something. Then he created a fire. Then the demon came. Then the demon tried to attack Ambarish Maharaj. So Ambarish Maharaj is a king and he's a pure devotee of the Lord. He could have attacked actually. He could have killed the demon. But then he told, if he is put in that situation, that so much of, you know, somebody is trying to kill him and all, that means it's a will of the Lord. So he just, you know, he just as a devotee. So he didn't succumb to anger. So he just kept quiet. Maybe it's mercy of the Lord. Then immediately the Vishnu saw from the Vaikuntha, he saw that he is put into distress. Then immediately the Sudarshan Chakra is sent. And the time for Sudarshan Chakra and all, it's just fraction of a second. It just appears, right? So then it killed the demon. Then he started chasing Durvasa Muni. Then Durvasa Muni went everywhere, all the demigods, wherever he has to go. Then finally he went to Vishnu. Then Vishnu told, even I cannot help because he offended my devotee. So then he told, he go and beg forgiveness from. Then Durvasa Muni came and he pardoned himself, you know, he begged forgiveness. Then Vishnu retracted the Sudarshan Chakra. So Ambarish Maharaj didn't succumb to the anger. He was calm and peaceful. So that's the qualities of a spiritual person. Do you add something?
The physics of this story always baffles me, because Sudarshan Chakra just appears in a flash. It could have killed Durvasa Muni in another flash. But Durvasa Muni was faster than the Sudarshan Chakra.
It was chasing. No, basically this is
pushing.
No, by the time it chases him, it's definitely spiritual.
No, but how will you set example? These are all. See, Durvasa Muni is, if he can go to Vaikuntha Loka, that means he's a very, very powerful person, right? So what's proven here, example this one, what's proven is here, if you offend a devotee, even the Narayana will not protect you. That's the example. See, somewhere we have to set examples using the characters.
Yeah, but the Sudarshan Chakra gave him enough time to go and apologize. So
yeah.
It's chasing.
Basically, it's sitting on your bay. No, it's like somebody holding your gun, in the back of your head.
Otherwise, if you just think about it, like, you could have done the job.
Yeah, of course. No, anyway, he doesn't have to. Ambarish Maharaj himself is very qualified. He can just kill Durvasa Muni because he's a very pure devotee. But we cannot just, you know, for that we cannot tell Durvasa Muni is lower than Ambarish Maharaj. These are all different characters Lord uses to set examples and to show how to behave. And in this particular case, you cannot offend a devotee. So especially the Narayana and all, they can, if you offend them, they're okay, they don't do anything. But if you offend their devotee, they will not rescue you. They will just So that's the example. Of course, yeah, you can say Sudarshan Chakra can kill anybody anytime. You know,
it's not Heisenberg uncertainty principle. So if you are trying to measure wrong thing, you will get wrong results. There you are not measuring physics. You are trying to measure how fast, how he went.
No, anyway, yeah, the analogy is used. So Mataji is telling
the meaning.
Yeah.
But it did not find going.
So we use analogies to just understand things, you know, because we cannot, mind cannot understand a lot of things. So we have to use the. So we got all that, right? So.
So wasn't like Vishnu's one avatar also like Parshuram, who is
Parshuram? Yes, Parshuram. Yeah, he is a.
So why did Lord appear in that form, whereas here he says that to be a.
Yes.
At devotion service, you have to be free from anger.
So there is a big pastime why Parshuram appeared also. Because I think, I don't remember the exact
the
details.
The weight of Kshatriyas was over.
So because this is related to, again, I think somebody, the Kamudenu cow, right? Some rishi had a Kamudenu cow. So the king tried to...
That is Vishwam.
Oh, that's Vishwamit. Okay, then this is Ganga, I think, water flow or something. I don't know the details, but there is a specific reason why Parshuram appeared to kill all the Kshatriya generation. 21 times. He killed everybody in the whole universe, all the Kshatriyas. Then after that, he fought with Bhishma. Bhishma was the disciple of Parshuram. But then they couldn't defeat. Both are so powerful, right? There is an example there, yeah, that's also there. Bhishma could not... Parshuram could not defeat Bhishma. Can you imagine? Even Parshuram is the incarnation of the Lord.
Bhishma
is one of the Mahajans,
right?
Bhishma is Mahajan. He is a pure devotee of the Lord.
Wasn't Bhishma Kshatriya too?
Yeah, he is a Kshatriya.
Parshuram is a Brahmana.
No, Bhishma.
Parshuram is a Brahmana.
The Pandavas were
Kshatriya. So, Prabhu, we will read this quickly. I think I don't know what time. We will finish this. Let's read the purport, so we don't want to stop in between. So we can read the purport.
The word Muni means one who can agitate his mind in various ways for mental speculation without coming to factual conclusion.
So this is mental speculation. They keep speculating, like all the philosophers, everybody. This is what, they don't come to the conclusion, Prabhupada is saying. So this is keep, something new, they keep trying to find something new. Yeah.
It is said that every Muni has a different angle of vision, and unless a Muni differs from other Munis, he cannot be called a Muni in the strict sense of the term.
That's okay. You can go to the English one. Yeah.
But Sthitadhir Muni, as mentioned herein by the Lord, is different from an ordinary Muni.
Mm.
The Sthitadhir Muni is always in Krishna consciousness, for he has exhausted all his business of creative speculation. He is called
Prashanta Mano Tatantara.
Or one who has surpassed the stage of mental speculations and has come to the conclusion that Lord Shri Krishna or Vasudeva is everything.
Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Atma Sudurlabha.
He is called a Muni fixed in mind. Such a fully Krishna conscious person is not at all disturbed by the onslaughts of the threefold miseries, for he accepts all miseries as the mercy of the Lord, thinking himself only worthy of more trouble due to his past misdeeds, and he sees that his miseries by the grace of Lord are minimized to the lowest.
So this is really the highest platform. So whenever we get into trouble, so if we can think like this, it's great, no? You have really done a lot of spiritual advancement. It's very, very rare and very difficult to think like that. When I get some problem, I cannot tell, you know, Lord, this is your mercy. I'm getting, you know, small, it's a tip of iceberg. I'm supposed to get a big, you know, maybe more bigger problem. But because of your mercy, you're giving me just a small portion of it. So if we can think, that's the ideal situation. That's how giving credit to the Lord. And even that situation, keeping up your service, whenever you are put in difficult. So see, this is a test actually. Practical things, right? So we are right now, you know, we are doing for, I'm talking for myself. I just, you know, theoretically I tell something here, but I don't have any really, you know, big problems or miseries. But my faith will be tested when there is some real problems, whether I will still continue doing service and keep up my teaching, all those things, whether I can keep it up. That's where it will be tested. For sure it will be tested at some point, because, you know, you have to write the exam, right? You cannot keep in the school all the time. You have to, some point you have to write the exam. So same thing here, the Lord will test all of us. Some point, are you really taking shelter, real shelter, or are you under some false shelters? So you'll give some small, you know, token, like in some small problem. So if you start, you know, blaming the Lord instead of, you know, praying like this prayer, this is the prayer it's supposed to be. But if you start saying, no, you're doing, you know, you're not good, I did so much for you, but you're not, looks like you're not, you know, helping me. Then you may go away. When you stop your service, especially when you stop the service for us chanting and doing any some temple services, if you stop thinking, you know, looks like, you know, you're not reciprocating, then we really know we are not really practicing sincerely. The real person, whatever the problems, they will do these prayers, you know, they will keep saying these prayers, and they will keep continually their service very enthusiastically. Whatever happens, I know the final goal, to reach Vaikuntha Loka. Why should I be bothered? I know this human life is short. The problems is keeps coming anyway, you know, we know. But I will keep continuing. If you do that, then, you know, you are making a progress, spiritual progress. That's how, so that's a test. So, and everybody will get tests. It's not that some people are, you know, exempt from writing this exam or something. It's not like that. Everybody will come. Some problems are the other. Unless you're a problemless person. You don't have any problems. You're already Sita Dira. So we are, so Prabhupada also discussed. So we don't want to be just a muni, as Prabhupada mentioned, very clear. Because there are a lot of munis already who keeps mental speculation. But we want to be Sita Dira Muni. So who is fixed in Krishna consciousness? We want to be like that. So then we can continue.
Similarly, when he is happy, he gives credit to the Lord. Thinking himself unworthy of the happiness, he realizes that it is due only to the Lord's grace that he is in such a comfortable condition and able to render better service to the Lord. And for the service of the Lord, he is always daring and active, and is not influenced by the attachment or aversion. Attachment means accepting things for one's own sense gratification, and detachment is the absence of such sensual attachment. But one fixed in Krishna consciousness has neither attachment nor detachment, because his life is dedicated in the service of the Lord. Consequently, he is not at all angry even when his attempts are unsuccessful. Success or no success, a Krishna conscious person is always steady in his determination.
So powerful. So if we can remember when we are in some problem, maybe we can write this somewhere, you know, on usually on the post-it and put it somewhere. Just read every day, you know, come across, just read this one. See, it's so... Because I told, I have not personally gone through a lot of major problems, which but if I come across, I hope I will remember all this. I just said. And yeah, so whenever you are happy, do we really give credit to the Lord? No, right? At least I don't give. I carried away, right? I get carried away. I will never even think of the Lord. I think it's happening because of me, or, you know.
Exactly the same thing. Basically means everybody remembers the Lord in times of sadness, but not in the time of happiness. But if you're remembering them in the times of happiness, then why would sorrow ever come?
That's true. Why will you, if you're always situated? So the other very, very important point here is, so we are not attached or we are not detached. Right? So anything, right? We can use, actually if you see, most of the things we can use it in Lord's service. It's not that. No, so So that's what Prabhupada is saying. But one fixed in Krishna consciousness, neither attachment nor detachment, because his life is dedicated in the service of the Lord. Basically, you get attached or detached only when you put yourself in the center. Right? Things. But here, if you put Krishna in the center, you won't have, you don't have to deal duality actually. The main thing is, you don't have to do deal with the duality if you are engaged in the service. And success or no success, a Krishna consciousness person is always steady in his determination. Right? What intelligence is that?
There was an element
of always, you know, full determination. You're always fixed in Krishna consciousness.
Okay.
We'll stop here. Any questions?